This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're going to be talking about improving the federal workforce, improving the process of human resources within the federal government. Always a dynamic of people always complaining about the human resource side in terms of the people who hire and the people who retain and recruit. Are there things that can be done that can improve, whether it be technology, whether it be best practices and everything else? There's been a number of different things that are talking about improving the federal workforce in the recent budget analytical document that was released. There's a big piece in here that talks about, and it's the fiscal year 2015 analytical perspectives, the budget of the U.S. government. There's a big piece in here that talks about improving the federal workforce in terms of strengthening it and improving that process of getting the right people. We're going to be talking to one of our favorite experts today who knows about HR because that's one of the things that her company does for the federal government, Linda Rick. She's co-CEO of Aview Technologies. They run AviewCentral.com and a number of other sites that have HR processes that federal agencies use to hire and to assess employees and to bring them into their recruit workforce through recruitment. Linda, welcome to Fed Access.
Hey, good to hear you. Good to be here.
I know, always good to be here. We've been dealing
early
with all
on
this.
The West Coast.
Exactly, right? Deal with all this cold and the weather, and I got a cold and everything else, and so it's good for us, all of us, to be here. Hey, you know, I was reading through and the document that the fiscal year 2015 analytical perspectives, and they had this big piece on improving the workforce. You know, what's your thoughts on that? And as you know, as this being a key issue that we're looking at towards the future.
Yeah, I actually I thought that the document hit on. Some of the more crucial elements of what is happening to the federal workforce and sort of what needs to be done about it. I was pretty pleased to see it have the prominence that it has in terms of the overall budget for 2015 and kind of the underlying thought process around what the 2015 budget has in it and why it has that in it. I did think that the analytical perspectives on the federal workforce hit a lot of the key elements that you would look to try to address if you're in the administration. I think it missed some other key elements that probably ought to be addressed at some point as they kind of dive further into the process. I was a little disturbed by there's a lot of numbers and a lot of tables in this analytical perspective, but the use of words like assume or implies or concludes or leads one to believe, you know, those sorts of terms, despite the use of a lot of quantitative looking data, tells me that we don't have all the data we need to be able to do a really accurate analysis of the condition of the federal workforce. So I think that's something that needs to be built into the framework of the federal government. This one area where you do see a lot more focus on data analytics in human resources and in the human capital management function, which I distinguish from human resources. I don't see those as the same thing. But you're not seeing government be able to apply those kinds of statistical methods of analysis with rigor. So I do think there's a lot that is in this particular section of the report that points to issues, pay issues, issues related to the talent in the federal government, issues related to just general employment trends, things that have affected the federal workforce in terms of created the type of climate, the level of engagement of the federal workforce. Those are all, you know, ongoing sorts of things we talk about all the time related to federal government. But the area that where you want more concreteness is about things like the difference between federal and private pay, and why is the federal government growing in certain areas as compared to the private sector? Why is its employment base different from the private sector? Those are things that I think are worth a lot more concreteness in terms of the investigation of those things.
You know, I was reading through some of the workforce challenges, and these challenges are not new. I mean, one of the big ones they pointed out, and the first one they pointed out, which to me kind of says something, is this kind of outdated personnel system. The dynamics, we dealt with the GS pay system has been in effect since 1949. But they're kind of saying this personnel system is not in relevance with today's times. What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's true. It's been a long time. It's been since Jimmy Carter, 1978, that we've had any reform of the civil service. And it's time to really take a look at that. I think the difficulty in doing that is it's hard to get reforms through because you can't really reform the personnel system in small pieces. This is something where there needs to be a global perspective of looking at the entire system and looking at the cause of the effects that we see today relative to the entire system. And also, you know, we need somebody who's going to have a way to true squad how much of this is really systemic to the personnel system and how much of it is really how people have come to practice within that personnel system structure. So there are some things along those lines. There is a statement in the analytics about a congressionally chartered commission that would be comprised of many people from many different sectors that would come in and analyze this, which reminded me, frankly, a little bit of the Ronald Reagan's Grace Commission, which was an amazing effort to examine in detail all of the elements of government, and I think there were 800 people on that commission. And if you were an executive, for example, in a healthcare company, you were part of the commission to study HHS and so on, although it was something else before that. And so I think that's worth doing because you need a broad-based global perspective of all the things that have to change. And you can't accept that you can increment your way into this. I think it's time to reset and do that reform.
You know, as I look at this and reading through it, it kind of talks about things that, and you know, me and you have been talking for a long time, but it talks about allowing the government to, you know, to compete for and reward top talent, rewarding performance, and you know, and increasing responsibilities, and encouraging adequate flexibility for family caregivers. You know, these are all things that you would seem to think were no-brainers. You know, that we would seem to not have, but I remember when they tried to do the pay for performance systems and they tried to bring that into government and how much pushback that received. Do you think that this is a dynamic that either the unions will fight, either in certain constituents will feel like, you know, you're encroaching on us. Certain people will say, how are you going to actually gauge performance and why is this person getting more than me? Are we in for a difficult fight to really get this through? Is this even possible in the government these days, or can this even be done by executive order?
I don't think it can be done by executive order for sure. I think this is a statutory change, and you will absolutely have pushback. I mean, there will be no corner, no comment, no opinion that will not receive a due amount of criticism. through the process, because you're changing something that's fundamentally, you know, it's fundamentally grown over decades and decades and decades. It started with a patronage system, and then it went to a merit-based system, and then it went into this concept of things like pay for performance, which I frankly think are antiquated concepts today. I don't think that that's how you get the government and the government's workforce to somehow, you know, acknowledge that productivity measures are what we should be meeting in government. I think that's an antiquated notion that not very many people subscribe to today. In terms of performance management, is not the same thing as pay for performance. And the pay for performance experiments that have gone on in the government have largely resulted in a system in which the performance ratings are not really very quantitative anyway. You're not really getting a quantitative analysis of performance improvement. What you're getting is a subjective anecdotal analysis of a person's performance over the period of a year. Hmm. So I think if you're going to institute something like, and that has never changed, this is the reason why employees are often so concerned about their performance rating, is because you have a situation where there's almost no data that supports a rating of a particular type. It's really anecdotal, and as many employees will tell you, it's highly subjective and very, very relationship-based.
And we got to take a quick break, but one question that I want to maybe address, even, you know, does even the evaluations, do they really even impact somebody's pay, or have we gotten to a point through the GS system that people are going to incrementally get increases in pay regardless of what their mm-hmm. performance is? I mean, are we in a system that it doesn't really make a difference? I mean, you know, maybe a couple people get a couple bonuses here or there, but to all in all, no matter how I perform, I'm going to still get my increase. I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Linda Ricks. She's co-CEO of Aview Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com. They run the site aviewcentral.com, which is a job site for federal workers. And you can go on there, find jobs, and apply for federal positions at that site as well. And they do a number of other things that deal with the federal government. We're talking about improving the federal workforce today. We're talking about what can be done to get the federal workforce into the next century, into up to date with technology and everything else. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about improving the federal workforce. We're talking about what can be done in a recent document that was called the Analytical Perspectives of the Budget of the U.S. Government for 2015. There has a big piece in there that talks about improving the federal workforce and how to go about doing this. We're talking about it to one of the experts who understand HR. She's been in OPM, worked at OPM in government a long time ago, but her company focuses in on a long, long time ago. but her company focuses in on, you know, federal HR solutions and dealing with these situations and how to improve it with technology and other things. We're talking to Linda Rick. She's co-CEO of Aview Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com, and they also run the site Aview Central, aviewcentral.com, which is a federal job site where you can find federal jobs. Linda, we were talking about this analytical perspectives for fiscal 2015 with the budget for the federal government, improving your workforce. We were talking about some of the, you know, the key pieces of it, where it's talking about, you know, really the outdated personnel systems and other ties to it. You know, as we look at this thing, and we look at pay for performance, is it really a system that, you know, people really are being paid for performance? Are we just in a system that people honestly are being paid to sit, you know, to, and I'm not saying this in a negative way. You know, there are some people who are excellent federal workers and they deserve to be paid for performance, and they're not getting the pay they deserve. There are mm-hmm. some people who are sitting in a seat, and, you know, and we all know that in every organization, there are people who are sitting in a seat. You know, and the complaint is that the person who is really, you know, busting their behind is not adequately being recognized, while the other person is, you know, they're on the same, you know, same pay status, and no one is really getting recognition above anybody else. Is that right? Do you feel like that's still just, you know, true today?
I think you know, the structure of the federal pay and compensation and classification system, where the grade structure is defined and all of that, is very, very different than how the private sector operates. So when you look at performance and you say, well, what in the system supports increased or improved performance, or what rewards people when they do perform at these high levels? And the answer to that is really pretty simple. The current federal government system does not reward high or highly optimized levels of performance. What it does is it says, if someone is not performing, here's the mechanism you can use to remedy that or to remove this person from the federal workforce. So there is no real upside-based performance management system in the federal government. It's all downside-based. And I think that leads to people having, where people have expectations of, when I get my performance appraisal or when I get my performance rating, I want to be recognized in some concrete way, right, for really, you know, putting a lot of effort into the job and trying to do the right thing and, you know, make wonderful things happen for the agency. There are high levels of performance that you can be given in terms of your performance rating. There's the possibility for performance awards or bonuses, tough budgetary time,
right,
on at least not on a very large scale. So what typically happens with pay-for-performance experiments in the government, and we've been experimenting with pay-for-performance in one version or another since 1978. And when you since the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978, which was the first time a performance management system was mandated in the government. And so we've been experimenting this whole time, but the problem is, after a certain point, pay escalates to a point where it is adversely impacting the budget, because no one budgets for improved performance. And the only way you can really have the money to sustain that is if you're getting more money every year, because people increment up actually fairly fast in a performance-based pay system.
Mm-hmm.
So when DOD had the big experiment on that in the last few years, what happened was the salary levels actually went up considerably. So in order to pay for that, you actually have to have a productivity increase that you can measure, at where you can say, we're not just paying you because you're really applying yourself and putting a lot of effort toward this, and we're seeing for example, at the VA, we're seeing that the claims you're processing at a faster rate. Well, if you're seeing that kind of productivity increase, it should be generating some type of economic savings for you,
right,
as an agency.
Right.
But that performance,
which would justify the increase in pay, or the rewarding somebody because you're saving money, you're helping constituents, and everybody wins.
Right. And the problem government has had is the same problem the private sector has had with performance ratings. When you're a private company, you have concrete quantitative measures of how a business unit is doing. Then you're able to track that to the individual and their individual contribution. This is typically tracked by billable hours. It's tracked by revenue generation. It's tracked by profitability. You know, you've got these measures. The government also has those measures, but the government does not, because funding is allocated by appropriation, or funding is allocated by some form of fee collection-based revenue, you're never going to get this concreteness between how the agency is performing economically and whether an individual should be given, you know, some type of bonus or pay increase on the basis of that. So I think this all goes back to me to you either have a tenured public service that is a cadre of career civil servants that are very focused on the mission of the agency and are, in essence, protected to some extent because they are tenured, or you go to a private sector model where you don't have a tenured civil servant, and you have a lot more free exchange of employees coming into government and leaving government, going to private sector, and then rotating back into government and so on. But the government, I think the problem we have is between Congress and the administration successively since Jimmy Carter, we have not been able to say, we want a tenured public service, ergo, this is how our compensation scheme is going to run, and this is how we're going to, you know, we're going to manage that entity. Or we want, in fact, a civil service that is interchangeable with other sectors, industry, state, local government, and so on. And that interchangeability is what we're counting on for longer term, you know, sort of productivity increases.
Which and one then, do you think is one that, you know, would serve government better? I mean, do we need to, you know, because sometimes the private sector is moving at a speed that's better than government. And sometimes, you know, those people in, you know, coming out of the private sector can maybe bring some new models, you know, back into government and help improve it.
Yeah, I think that there are elements of both. And there should be some consideration as this goes forward and the commission starts to undertake this study. There are certain aspects of the federal government where you want a tenured civil servant,
mm-hmm.
because that tenured civil servant is always going to look out for the interests of the country and the citizens and are completely protected from ample machination as a result of you know, our rather fast election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in those elements, and they may be things like where you have a concrete responsibility to deliver service to citizens, could be the IRS, could be Social Security Administration, could be, you know, elements of law enforcement, you know, things like that where the individual is buffered from the political layer, which in the government today is very, very deep inside each agency.
Mm-hmm.
So to the extent that you want a tenured civil service, you pick those areas that you really want to protect from being overly politicized. And then for the rest, what you want is churn, because that generates a lot of innovation.
Do you think that as we begin to possibly look at this, and I want you to answer this question when we come back on the break, because we've got a changing workforce. Another piece of this I wanted to go into this is that the aging workforce. Do you think that we have a unique period of time now that, you know, since we're going to have so many people possibly leaving government, you know, in the near future, within the next several years, because of an aging workforce, is this the time to possibly start implementing, you know, such changes? Because, you know, we're also now talking about bringing in a new breed of government workers. I want to talk about that as we come back. We're talking to Linda Ricks. She's co-CEO of AVIEW Central, well, AVIEW Technologies, and she runs AVIEWCentral.com, but she's co-CEO of AVIEW Technologies. You can find them at AVIEWTech.com, and you can find AVIEW Central at AVIEWCentral.com, which was a federal job site where you can begin looking for federal jobs and also applying to them there. We're talking about improving the federal workforce. We're going to keep this conversation going when we come back. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about improving the federal workforce. There is a recent document that came out, the Analytical Perspectives of Fiscal Year 2015, that talked about the budget of the U.S. government. And in this document, there's a big piece on here about improving the federal workforce, very, very much so analyzing some of the concerns about the federal workforce and how do we improve it as we go forward into the future. We're talking to Linda Ricks. She's co-CEO of AVIEW Technologies. You can find them at AVIEWTech.com. They also run the federal job site, AVIEWCentral.com, where you can find federal jobs and apply to them on that site. They have a number of HR solutions for federal agencies, and so they're an expert on, you know, improving the federal workforce, improving their HR processes, and she's chiming in on her thoughts on how we can begin this process of improving the federal workforce. Linda, we were just kind of talking about, you know, the personnel system, improving it. But as I was kind of going out, I was mentioning, and it talks about in this report that the aging workforce, okay, that we're constantly seeing a number of federal retirements. They're going to continue to retire. We're going to have to start replacing these workers as they begin, you know, as economic times are starting to stabilize a little bit. People are going to start thinking about retirement even more. Is this a good time, since we're going to have maybe a good swell of retirement, is this a good time to have this conversation of a new workforce, of a new personnel system?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably overdue to a large extent, from, you know, maybe a decade overdue. The opportunity that's posed by the fact that we're going to be rethinking, you know, how we hire people and how our organizations are structured, where our positions are, how they are graded, what kind of career progression potential there is, whether we should hire, you know, folks at the entry level rather than at the full performance level. But you still have, you know, you still have the need for some level of, you know, carryover of corporate expertise, if you will, and knowledge and history that needs to happen as well. And that process of capturing that, I think, is very, very difficult.
Enough succession planning is being done in the federal government.
Succession planning that's done in the federal government is not very, from where you look at it, it's easy to say, yeah, we've got this level of retirement threat, you know, if you will, these many people may leave. But the problem with it is people don't step back and say, okay, are we going to hire and fill the same positions, or are we going to restructure and try to optimize the number of positions we have to, you know, better tailor the organization to meet our mission? That's the process that needs to take place, and it's actually rather it's kind of a classic, it's a classic federal HR function called position management, position design, and that function has not been practiced in the federal government for a very long time. So people look at succession planning as, well, we're going to have a skill deficit. Do we want to retool? How do we want to restructure the organization? And then how do we, you know, kind of over the process completely retool the organization so it's a lot more agile and more responsive to both technology solutions that can be implemented that would take care of a lot of the work that the labor force is doing, and then how do we optimize our function around that? So I think, you know, the one of the things in the report is that we've declined by 30% in non-security positions since 1992. So that tells you a lot about, you know, what's happening with the government sector when it comes to workforce backfilling positions, where, you know, how do we get the talent that we need? And a lot of it comes from contractors, frankly.
You know, there was an area in here that talked about developing and engaging personnel to improve performance. And there were really some startling things that came out of this. There was an area that they did the employee viewpoint survey. They were saying that the 2013 results showed that federal employees continue to be engaged, but the responses revealed a significant drop in employee satisfaction and continued to decline across the majority of questions. A number of different people seem to be not as happy about their agencies, not as happy about the work. And this seemed to be kind of a trend with a number of agencies across the board. That's concerning, especially when the issues are so critical with the federal government are dealing with. Is this all kind of going back to what we've been talking about pay, or is it even more? Is it about leadership? Is it about what the government is doing in terms of improving morale? Is it about a number of other factors? What are you thinking? What are you sensing?
I go back to when I talk to individuals like that are in intern programs or that are new hires into the federal government, their satisfaction level is extremely low. When you are part of a generation of people who, and I saw a funny YouTube video the other day where they gave rotary dial phones to kids and teenagers and asked them to see if they could place a call.
Were they able to?
They literally couldn't figure out how it worked. But you sort of have this rotary dial environment that smartphone generation people are coming into. I would expect that employee satisfaction would go down as more hires are made into the workforce from a different generation. And part of the problem and part of the dissatisfaction is that it's when people say they lack the resources, usually in the federal government that means a couple of things. One, they don't get any training. Their training is OJT or on the job, right? They're getting trained by people who have been there for 25 or 30 years and are very, very accustomed to the business process that the agency has been using. And you find when you talk to people who are, you know, new into the federal government and are leaving at a average rate government-wide, they leave a level of 25% per year in the first 5 years of employment. So in some agencies, that's as high as 45%.
Right.
So when you see this churn going on in new hires, it's because they come in and, you know, and they're expecting to be able to have certain technology tools. They are not expecting to have paper-based processes, and a lot of government is very, very focused on paper-based processes. They're not expecting to be trained by someone who's worked there for 25 or 30 years. They're expected to be trained in a pretty professional, classroom type of training or online type of training environment. They're into self-service. They're not into a lot of supervision. So part of what I think is occurring, and when they have an idea about something, they have a certain level of expectation that it will be, you know, heard on the merits of the idea. And so you have a couple of issues with that I think are really important. One, IOD, bring your own device to work, allowing people to use their own devices and use them in a work context. So I think what has to happen here is the employee engagement and the employee viewpoint survey, I think, is, first of all, I think is pretty critically flawed because very, very few individuals actually get surveyed. And in some cases, you may have a very large agency of over 200,000 employees, and the survey results for that agency are based on, 1,100 people. And I think it's not sophisticated enough to make that projection across the board. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing is there should be some level at which those survey results are translated into concrete workforce management strategies that are not global government-wide, but that are tailored specific to the agency at hand and specific to how they recruit, who they recruit, where they bring them in from, typically what the expectations of the workforce are, ethically biased people.
Hold that comment right there, Linda.
That has to be done.
Hold that right there, that thought right there. We got to take a quick break. We're going to continue this conversation about federal workforce, about improving the federal workforce. We're talking to Linda Ricks. She's co-CEO of AVIEW Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com. They also run the job site, the federal job site, AVIEW Central. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about improving the federal workforce. What can be done to get this federal workforce into the new century as being one of the best places to work? You know, and we've talked about that as a continuous model. Some people love the federal government, but many people do not love the process that people are getting hired by, the retention process, the paper performance process. There are a lot of things that people always wish they could improve about the federal government and its human capital processes. We're talking to Linda Ricks. She is the co-CEO of Aview Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com. They run the federal job site, Aview Central. You can find that at aviewcentral.com. Linda, you know, in looking at this, I know that, you know, your company has been kind of dealing with this, and you've talked about some of these issues. You've talked about creating a digital community of HR professionals, you know, within your realm, within your company, and somewhere that HR professionals within government can kind of get in and then begin talking. What is this digital community in order to address some of these issues that we've been talking about?
Right. I think it's time for the federal human resources community to be much more adaptive and agile. And I think one way to do that is to create digital communities of people that are essentially networks of sort of like-minded HR professionals. And it needs to really leverage kind of a concept of crowdsourcing. New ideas and new approaches and innovations in federal HR that we can deploy within the existing statutory framework that we have today. I think there are very very few forums for human resources professionals that are tackling some very, very difficult and kind of interesting problems. So in the report on the analytical perspectives, there's a table on page 73. It's a table that compares federal and private sector workforces by occupation. And one of the things it shows is that managers, for example, in the federal workforce are represented at 11.7% as compared to the private sector, where they're represented at 13.6%. Okay. But there's a category called miscellaneous professionals, where the government has a much higher representation rate at 15.2%, where the private sector has a very low representation rate of 8.5%. And the reason for that is what isn't made clear here, because I don't think there's been enough analysis of it, but one of the problems the federal government has is a large percentage of the workforce is contractor-based.
Hmm.
But there is no way to credit and make a person a manager that should be a manager that is actually managing a very large contractor workforce rather than a very large federal workforce. And OPM guidance on how to sort of credit positions with this contractor oversight function is non-existent. In fact, it's negative.
So we really don't have a good, accurate count of even the federal contractor workforce.
Right. We don't have an accurate count, and we don't credit people who should be credited with this fairly substantial responsibility.
Who could be project managers or things like that, or have a contract oversight, and they could be there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they're not made managers, if you will. And what I'm trying to do we're reprising an old organization called the Classification Compensation Society, which went defunct quite some time ago. And we're reprising this as a digital community, because a problem like this, how do you deal with giving appropriate credit, if you will, to people who manage contractors rather than federal employees? That's an idea where we would like to kind of crowdsource that and see what kind of innovation we can generate, and including if we need to push on policy changes that need to take place in order to address that issue effectively. But we're looking to create a way for people to share very deep expertise, whether they have retired from the government or in the private sector or in the government today, to tackle some of these kinds of problems that we're seeing and make sure that we can start creating an open forum that says, here's a big gap between what we say and what we do, and here's a big gap in terms of it has an adverse impact on the federal workforce when we do things this way, and here's an idea of how to create a solution around that.
You know, you bring up a good point, Linda. Do you feel like there are a lot of people, and just you talking to HR people, we don't necessarily have a lot of time, but do you feel like there are a lot of people who are not getting credit for the work they do within the federal government, where we kind of hit this miscellaneous professional dynamic where there are people who have certain job descriptions, but maybe they're not really even doing what that job description says or that classification says? They're doing all these other kind of things, but they're really not getting credit for it because it's not really part of what, you know, the classification says you're supposed to do.
Right. And in essence, what's happening is the classification system, you know, people, that is the system that was created in 1949. So we're still dealing with, you know, with the antique nature of that. But it was never so prescriptive that it couldn't be made agile by having a different policy structure set by OPM. And where OPM has kind of gone to this other direction of the things that they want to do as an agency and the mission that they want to accomplish as an agency, what they have failed to do is really focus on their policy making as an agency. That's where we could, if we could get some changes made and a good policy change here, which could be done without a statutory, you know, change being made, is we are going to credit federal employees that manage contractors with that workforce underneath them as if it were federal employees.
Hmm.
And if we did that, it would enable us to greatly reshape our thinking about how people are, how their jobs are classified and how they're compensated. Because if you don't get credit for that, in a lot of cases, it's very difficult to get above grade 13 level.
Right.
And so you really need to have a way to say, you know, here's something, here's a big problem in government. Government is very, very significantly involved in just contractor oversight as a principal mission in every agency. So that's how a lot of work gets done these days, particularly when there's a hiring freeze.
Right.
First thing that happens is, well, we'll contract that out. So there's always a mismatch between how much money you have and how many employees you have, right? Because some money is allocated just for payroll, but then there's the discretionary money, and that ends up being payroll, but being payroll through a contractor process. So I think these are the kinds of things we're looking to just generate a lot of conversation about, a lot of ideas about, and, you know, some critical analysis about whether this requires a change in statute or whether it can be done or accommodated through a change of policy.
And as you get that out, and as you, mm-hmm. and hey, because we always got to cut it short, Linda, I wish we had hours to talk about it. is there a place that they're going to find this that people can go to, or is this something that's going to roll out that you're going to announce in the near future?
Yeah, there's two places. One is there is a Facebook page, the Classification Compensation Society. The other is www.classncomp.com. So it's classncomp.com.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Linda, for providing some insight. You know we're going to have you back and continue this conversation, because if there's anything that has to be improved, it's the federal workforce. And as the time progresses, as society changes, as the economics change, and maybe the private sector begins to bounce back even more, these conversations about the federal workforce are going to become even more important. Thanks so much for being on Fed Access, Linda.
Hey, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.